Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
Have you heard me talk about what I call the airport test? Here's the idea. Imagine you go to the airport and you approach 100 people at random. And I choose the airport, by the way, because if you can fly somewhere, you've got some money, some education, probably some familiarity with culture. So therefore, asking about elements of culture would seem to be a reasonable idea. So go to the airport, approach 100 random people, and ask them to name for you 10 famous painters. And I'll bet they can, easily. More than 10, as a matter of fact. Or 10 musicians. Again, easy, more than 10. Or 10 novelists. Again, I'll bet they can. Maybe they haven't read those books, but they at least know the names of the novelists, some contemporary, some classical. And probably almost everybody would pass all of those tests. Then ask 100 people randomly at the airport to name 10 fine art photographers. You'll get one, Ansel Adams. Everybody knows Ansel Adams. Maybe you might get a few people who have heard of, oh, I don't know, Edward Weston, or maybe Alfred Stieglitz because of his connection with George O'Keefe. But you're not going to get 10, which says a great deal about photography. But that's not what I want to really focus on today's podcast. Instead, I want to focus on you and me as photographers. We definitely should know more than 10 photographers. In which case, then, who are the important ones that we do know? Again, all of us know Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, and probably we could get to 10 fairly easily. But there are some photographers that I think, at least in my life, have been incredibly important photographers who even photographers are still unfamiliar with. Or maybe they've heard of them, but can't recall any of their photographs. And that's too bad, because the masters of photography have a lot to teach us. So I'm going to make this real simple. Here are 10 lesser-known photographic masters that I think every one of us should spend more time studying their work, looking at their books and images. If you get an opportunity, seeing their original prints in a gallery or a museum somewhere. Because what they contributed to photography as the history of photography unfolded is incredibly important, even for us who are amateur photographers and hobbyists and not historians and not on a path to ourselves try to become a master of photography. We just enjoy photography, and there's a lot that these 10 can teach us. If you're not familiar with any of these photographers' works, you can easily find them on the internet today. You don't even have to go to the library. You can just look them up and see lots of their images. So here we go. 10 lesser-known masters you should study. The first one I'll put on the list is Roy de Carava. I've always thought de Carava is an absolutely masterful photographer because of his use of shadows. I know, photography is light writing, photography, and so many photographers, it's all about getting light into the picture. And it is with de Carava, too. But he illuminates shadows in a way that give his photographs an intimacy, a secrecy, a kind of peek into his world that very definitely gives us the sense that we're riding along with him in his view of a secretive world. And I'm not saying this because there's anything about him being a black photographer. It's that his photographs are so deeply enmeshed in shadows with little bits of highlight that tell us the story. Not all of his photographs. There's many examples you can find of what I would call normally exposed and processed images. And they're great. He's a great photographer no matter what the light is. But of all the photographers that I know who really tend to amplify the importance of shadows, I guess, Roy de Carava is the master. And I just love the way he brings shadows to life. And in particular, in ways that I'm just not sure I can think of any other photographers who do it so well. I'm not sure what he did to make his wonderful images, but he's definitely a photographer that I wish many more people knew about, even in photographic circles. Next, Paul Strand. Now, Paul Strand maybe isn't an unknown commodity for lots of you, because he's been such an important photographer for me that if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know how often I bring up Paul Strand, and in particular, his wonderful books. I've seen some of his original prints, but it's his books that I think really excel. Tierra Moran, Un Paese, Time in New England, his botanical work from Orgeval, France, and that's just to name a few. He's a terrific photographer who taught me the idea of portrait of a place, which is something that we all do in one form or another, is we find a place that's interesting. Might be a state park, might be our backyard, might be some abandoned factory or some exotic landscape. We find a place and we take a bunch of pictures of it. Paul Strand taught us how to think about portrait of a place in a way that wasn't just pictures of a building. His editing, I guess, and I'm assuming he did his own editing, well, at the very least, he did it with his camera, what he chose to photograph or not. Maybe he did the editing in his books, too. I don't know. But the way he presents a place, not only buildings and fields and landscape, but also people, and not only outside, but inside. Not only the activities that people engage inside, cooking, reading, conversation, etc. The list could go on. His portrait of a place really does give us a feeling that we know the place, at the very least, a little bit. Because he doesn't just take pictures of things. He takes pictures of a way of life, of something that gives us a sense of the passage of time in the way he freezes time. So we get a portrait of a place at a given time in history. If you're at all interested in doing portrait of a place, and I think most of us probably are at one point or another, Paul Strand is an excellent photographer to study to figure out how he does that, what he chooses to photograph, how he chooses to sequence the images in his books. Paul Strand is the master. Next on my list of 10 is David Plowden. Boy, talk about books. David Plowden has done I don't know how many books. But his commitment to photographing small-town America, middle America, the American scene, particularly in the mid-20th century, is simply mind-boggling. The only one I can think of who's done something similar was Auguste Sander, who tried to do a project that was very broad in scope. He wanted to photograph every class of people that there were in German society. And it was a huge multi-decade project. Well, David Plowden has done something similar, more contemporary than Auguste Sander, but his approach to capturing in pictures the life in small-town America reminds me so much of so many authors, like, oh, I don't know, Upton Sinclair or Sinclair Lewis or Wright Morris, who I'll have more to say about in a few minutes. David Plowden is a terrific photographer, a technical master, but also a very sensitive individual, and he knows how to find the nuggets that are America in a way that reminds me of Norman Rockwell. David Plowden has the ability to distill what he sees to that quintessential moment, that quintessential subject, that really tells us about small-town America in ways that few other photographers can. Okay, next is Aaron Siskind. I know Aaron Siskind from primarily two sources. One is there's a great biography of Aaron Siskind that was written by Carl Chiarenza. And if you can find a copy of it used, it's well worth it, because Aaron Siskind is the quintessential abstract photographer. He's the guy who wandered the streets of New York and photographed torn posters on the wall that made abstracts that are just to drool over. Now, if you don't like abstract photography, Aaron Siskind's probably not your photographer. But if you're looking for the kind of inspiration where you wander the streets and look for things that are not subject material and turn them into subject material, often abstracts, Aaron Siskind is your guy. He's a fascinating individual. I'm not sure I admire him for his personality. He has, like many artists, I suppose, certain flaws that I find a little off-putting. But his photography is fantastic. And if you're not familiar with Aaron Siskind, then he's a photographer that you would definitely learn something from if you're interested in abstract, kind of wander the world looking for things that other people would just walk past. The next on my list is another New York photographer, Andre Kertész, who at least spent the back half of his life in New York. He's a Hungarian-born photographer, and I find him particularly interesting because I do love European photography, because there are so few photographers of Europe who are landscape-oriented photographers. There are some, obviously, and I'm glossing over them. But Andre Kertész is one of those photographers who has a definitely urban approach to his photography. But it's not just photographing skyscrapers and people of New York, which is where he eventually landed after leaving Hungary and spending quite a bit of time in Paris. His Hungarian and Paris photographs are interesting too. But when he got to New York and was somewhat isolated there, at least according to his biographies, somewhat isolated, he spent a good deal of his time developing what I'll characterize as the psychological portrait, or maybe even more so, the psychological self-portrait. When you look at the broad perspective of Kertész's photography, you realize that you're learning so much about Kertész, about his point of view of the world, which is based on his having been born in Hungary and spent considerable time in his youth in Europe, in Paris. But you would never know that by looking at his later work, because it's not about location. It's not about capturing even a certain time or a certain place, not portrait of a place like Paul Strand in the very least, not a certain time like David Plowden in Small Town America. Andre Kertész's work is timeless because it pertains to a sort of self-examination that we can all relate to in one form or another. So the psychological portrait or self-portrait is Kertész's strength. And perhaps my love of his work is to some degree a pendulum swing, because I spent my youth so involved in landscape photography, and particularly of the American West landscapes, that the idea of being a self-portraitist in New York just was the farthest thing away from my consciousness in photography. But finding Kertész and spending quite a bit of time studying his work, I've come to really appreciate his high-water accomplishment in terms of using the camera to make the kinds of photographs that are almost at the opposite end of the spectrum of my photography from my youth. Kertész opened doors that I didn't even know existed. Next, and perhaps related to Kertész, is Josef Sudek. Sudek is a Czech photographer, passed away in the mid-70s, and I was relatively late in discovering Sudek through some books. Because he's a European photographer, his biggest impact is in Europe, obviously. But there are a number of books of his work that are published in English that are still available either as new books or particularly as used books, and his work is simply magnificent. The great lesson from Sudek is that we can all make fantastic photographs without having to travel very far, maybe even in our own backyard, maybe even in our own kitchen, just looking outside the kitchen window at our yard, which is some of the best photography Sudek did. And you can't look at his photographs without a tremendous sense of feeling his compassion, his love of photography, his respect for the everyday and mundane things that make up our life. he would be a fascinating individual to have a conversation with, because I have a feeling that his philosophy about life and his life experiences must have been absolutely captivating. Well, we can't have a conversation with Sudeik, but we can look at his work. And if you're looking for an alternative to exotic travel to exotic lands to photograph exotic subjects, Sudeik is a great place to spend some time studying, to see his approach to photographing where he lived. And his work is simply wonderful. Next on my list is Arnold Newman. And I actually have two reasons to include Arnold Newman on this list of lesser-known masters you should study. He's known primarily for his environmental portraits. That alone is a reason to study the work of Arnold Newman, because he's absolutely wonderful. But there is a book that was published called Arnold Newman's Early Work, I think is the title of it, that's not his environmental portraits, but his wanderings around his urban neighborhood, photographing people on the street, architecture, interiors, exteriors. And what I find so amazing about that book in particular is how it is such a contrast to the work that made him more famous, more recognizable as a photographer, which was his environmental portraits. When I think of, for example, Ansel Adams, I think of Yosemite, and I don't think of much else. When I think of Edward Weston, I think of Point Lobos, and I don't think of much else. When I think of a contemporary photographer like Annie Leibovitz, I think of photographing rock and roll stars, or Sally Mann photographing her children. When I think of Arnold Newman, I think of environmental portraits. But it doesn't stop there. If we dig just a little deeper into Arnold Newman, we realize he's a lot more than just the environmental portraits that he's sort of semi-famous for. And that I find very motivational. You may have something that you really love photographing, and it may be the vast majority of your work, but that doesn't mean you can't break form and go photograph something else. The thing about being a photographer is we're not restricted to any given kind of photography, any given subject matter, any given location. It's the ultimate plastic medium that we can do almost anything we want to do. And Arnold Newman really opened my eyes to that by showing me that he was a lot more than just an environmental portraitist. Next on my list is Wright Morris. I've talked about Wright Morris a great deal, and I know some of you have become familiar with him because of that, but let me just bring it up again. Wright Morris was a fascinating photographer, very traditional kind of straight photography, large format, beautiful prints, etc. But what he did with his photographs, I think, is fascinating. He created fiction to go with his photographs, and wrote three books, The Home Place, The Inhabitants, and God's Country and My People, often using the same photographs of his family's farm in, I think it was Kansas, but I might be wrong about which state it was in, but anyway, he wrote three fictional bits of text to go with photographs about Midwest life. And I think they're fascinating examples of doing something different with photography. It's kind of related to Portrait of a Place, but it's a fictional place captured in real photographs of real places, in this case, his family's farm. I like Wright Morris's writing. He's written a number of different novels and was a very celebrated writer. But these three books that he did combining image and text, I think, are well worth studying. Next, I want to talk about Ralph Eugene Meteyard. His point of view, his examination of the world, is just a little off kilter. I often think of Ralph Eugene Meteyard as the other Diane Arbus. And if you want to examine a unique way of looking at the world and paying attention to things that the average person doesn't pay attention to, either Diane Arbus or Ralph Eugene Meteyard are well worth looking at. The reason I put Ralph Eugene Meteyard on my list rather than Diane Arbus is that she's a little more famous, and you might be tempted to look at her work with a sort of standard interpretation because she's so well known and her work has become synonymous with that certain style of photography. Ralph Eugene Meteyard does similar work, but he's less well known. And for my money, his work is every bit as interesting, if not more captivating, than Diane Arbus. When I look at Diane Arbus's work, it's always with a veneer of Diane Arbus. I have to look through Diane Arbus to see her photographs because her presence is so powerful and so strong that it's hard to look at her photographs without thinking about Diane Arbus. But I can look at Ralph Eugene Meteyard's photographs and I'm more in touch with the subjects that he photographed rather than his personality of having photographed them. So if you're not familiar with Ralph Eugene Meteyard, very definitely worth looking up. And the last photographer, which I'll mention in this list, although I wish I could go on and on, is Morley Bayer. Morley Bayer was one of the Carmel photographers. He was a huge fan of Edward Weston, moved to Carmel specifically to be close to Edward Weston. Morley Bayer was a well-known workshop instructor and a fantastic landscape photographer. And I tend to think of Morley Bayer as Carmel photography without the fame. It's hard to look at an Edward Weston photograph without having Edward Weston sitting on your shoulder, or the same could be said about Ansel Adams. But you can look at Morley Bayer's landscape photography, which is very similar to either Adams or Weston, but see it directly, kind of like I was mentioning with Ralph Eugene Meteyard. You can see his images without the overlay of Diane Arbus. By the same token, you can see Morley Bayer's landscapes without the overlay of Ansel Adams' fame or Edward Weston's fame. And it's for that reason that I just love Morley Bayer, a photographer who worked in relative obscurity compared to so many of his Carmel compatriots, but nonetheless had the same amount of talent as the others and photographed the same spectacular landscape as the others, and in some regards makes it easier to see those landscapes because his reputation doesn't get in the way of seeing them with clarity and precision. So those are my recommendation for 10 lesser-known masters you should study: Roy DeCarva, Paul Strand, David Plowden, Aaron Siskind, André Kertész, Josef Sudik, Arnold Newman, Wright Morris, Ralph Eugene Meteyard, and Morley Bayer.
Copyright 2026, Lenswork Publishing.